Sippers, welcome to this episode of the Tea With Me podcast with me, Shane Todd. There's a bunch of louts in the studio here. These guys are some crack. And we've got a real good episode coming up for you today. Before we get into anything, my leg's still broken. All right, don't worry about that. Before we get into anything, I've just announced a bloody tour of America. I'm not a blood, like not a war rampage. I'm doing stand-up all over America. The tour is in March. I'm going to tell you where I'm playing, and you can go get tickets from the venues if you want to go. 16th of March, Cobbs Comedy Club, San Francisco. 18th of March, The Hollywood Improv, Los Angeles. 20th of March, Chicago, Zanies. 22nd, Laugh Boston. 23rd, The Comedy Loft, Washington, D.C. 24th, The Stand, New York. And then 26th, two shows in Woodlawn, New York, in Rory Dolan's. And that's just a guy's house. Just Rory Dolan's gaff. I used to work in Spar with him. It's Woodlawn where, like, so many expats live. So if you know anyone in those places, send them my way. Tell them there's a kid coming to town from home. And, you know, he's packing a few jokes. But, yeah, buzzing for that. Tickets are already on sale. And, I mean, it's anyone's guess. The guys are like, how many people do the venue hold? San Francisco, 400. So, so who knows? You know, I could be adding a second. I could either be adding a second show, or there could be 8 people at that show. Who knows? But there you go. Tell anyone you know, and I definitely would appreciate that. Anyone you know that lives in America, not like your mate that lives in Tomb, is no good to me at all. Or, you know, you got a brother in Cairo or something. Whatever it is you have. A fucking an auntie in... Dan, where's the place?
In America? Or
just anywhere, mate, in the world.
Tasmania.
There you go. Fuck it. To be fair, you've knocked that out of the park. That is my American tour. Shows I've got locally, because people ask a lot, where are you playing next? I am doing the Opera House, Grand Opera House in Belfast, at the end of June, start of July, a few shows, and then in September as well. We'll put the link in the bio. Got to plug the Patreon. Patreon.com/TeaWithMePodcast. Now, people going, mate, what is the Patreon? Is it a drink? It's not. It's a site where you can get more content for the podcast. You can support the podcast. You know, because like we go through a lot of dosh here on record days. You know, let's just say Dan has a habit and he needs it taken care of. That's all I'll say. He just sent an alert to my watch saying, fuck up. Patreon.com/TVMePodcast. We do a bonus episode on a Monday. We do a thing also where in that episode where we guess what people look like, people that are patrons. I just get the boys to give me a random name. And, you know, it's offensive. You know, I got to say that we've done two of them and they've not been kind to people. But the Patreon's a lot of fun. We also do a live stream episode on a Friday with some of your favourite comedians. Last week we had Mickey Bartlett and Dave Elliott, an episode for the ages. I hope they don't drop out because we're recording this before that happens. So I hope it's not like me and just Rory Dolan back on the pod. Sponsors. We got sponsors. Don't we, Dan? What episode's this, mate?
148.
148. Complete stab at the dark. He can pull Tasmania out of his hole, but when it comes to the episode of the podcast, absolutely no chance. Yeah, it's episode 148 or so. We are sponsored, as always, as per, by Manscaped. The number one in men's below-the-belt grooming. You know what I'm talking about. You know when you need to take care of yourself down there? Maybe you're still using traditional methods. You know, maybe you're going in with those wee nail scissors. Hard open sometimes, aren't they? You know? Especially if you get water in them, a wee bit rusty. I mean, you don't want to be a guy that's trimming your pubic hair with rusty nails. Like, what do you do? If you're whipping out the rusty nail, if you, you know, you mean an attractive lady or man or you know, someone that defines himself as anything, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. What you don't want to say is when they say, you know, oh, would you like to join me in bed? Or if they're French, fuck, what's that thing out of the song? If you meet a French person and say, Voulez-vous coucher avec moi ce soir? You first of all, you say, très bien, ça va? I said I'll be a Mercier too. What you do, I'm not going to do the whole episode fresh. What you don't want to do is say, give me un moment while I get the rusty nail scissors and trim this bush. What you want to do is have in your back pocket the Manscaped Lawnmower 4.0. This is, folks, this is technology on a different level. Look, first of all, you have that in your pocket. You know, it looks like a wee mobile phone for a businessman from space. So that's kind of cool. You whip at it. There's a light on it, look. And if someone does say, Vukushevikmasishwa, not bad to have in the back pocket. Anyway. You know what I mean? Huh? Mon le bleu? I don't know. What does mon le bleu mean? I don't know either. Je ne sais quoi. But yeah, look, all you do is you get the light on this, and you can even do it in the dark. Like if you meet like a beautiful French person, and they're like, oh, you need to take care of your pubic hair first. Yeah, what you can say, and they say, you must go in, if they say, it would be so unreasonable, but if they're like, you must go into a dark room to do this, you know, to take care of that. You go in there with a rusty nail scissors, it's going to look like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. But if you go in with a Manscaped Lawnmower 4.0, hello, LED light, you're sweet, you're sorted. There's also ball deodorant, ball cleanser, ball wipes. It will impress the French person you're trying to curt, basically is what I'm saying. We have the discount code T with me for 20% off and free shipping. Manscaped.com. Très bien. We are also sponsored by Punjana for you making your thé au lait. Punjana is, if Manscaped are the number one in men's below the belt grooming, Punjana made by Thompson's Tea are the number one in men's above the belt drinking tea. They're Northern Ireland's number one selling teas, basically what I'm trying to say. These guys are on top of their game. These guys, do they take a day off, the Thompson's family over Punjana? Yeah, they take a day off. You know what they do on their day off? They make tea. That's what they do. They don't take days off. Me and Dan visited their facility recently. Always nice to get invited to a facility, isn't it? We went to a facility and didn't like, one guy pointed out, I think he's really high up in the company, that my car was quite dirty. I was like, well, I don't like you've done that, you don't know me. But and I got my car washed the day after, and then after that I broke my leg, so my car is still sitting very clean, mate, but a week later. So if you want to come up to the house and see it and fucking have a go, you can. Anyway, but don't stop sponsoring the podcast. These guys love it. Like Jamie from Thompson's literally cut his bag open to show us, didn't he, Dan? He cut his bag open in the middle of the facility to show us what was inside, and we couldn't believe it. He let us, like, we got our hands in it and all that sort of thing. Basically, it's pure tea in here. These other guys, I don't know what they're putting in it. There is tea, sure, but there's also, you know, there was a dreadlock from Mick Hucknall in one of these tea bags that I saw, Tetley, you know. But Pajana's Northern Ireland's number one selling tea. Keep drinking it. Keep supporting the podcast. We get videos all the time on Instagram and stuff of people, you know, bringing Punjana into work and saying, you know, the sippers need to be drinking this. We love all that kind of stuff. So just keep drinking it. If the Thompson's family keep making it, we'll keep drinking it. They are the sponsors of the Tea With Me podcast. My guest for this episode has won the World Superbike Championship 6 times more than I have. He is genuinely like one of the goats when it comes to like international sport. And he's from here, you know. And I think you could not overlook these achievements, but when you actually sit down and look at what this guy's won and the career he's had and still continues to have, it's mad. I want to ask him about his career, about his life, about being a professional motorbike racer. I have a big family link to that, which I'm going to talk to him about. And my granny won the Isle of Man TT 97 times. We're going to talk about that, and maybe you can give me some advice on my injury, because I doubt he's done a serious injury quite as bad as the old hairline fracture of the fibula playing soccer, you know. So we can talk about that. My guest, of course, is Jonathan Ray, who is just a wonderful ambassador for this place and one of the top sports people in the world, full stop. So please enjoy this episode. Please enjoy all episodes of the Tea With Me podcast. Go back into the archive and dig through all the episodes we've done and watch them back to back. Put a nappy on and watch every episode of the Tea With Me podcast. That's all we ask. This is a Tea With Me episode with Jonathan Ray. I've just spent 10 minutes telling you about this terrible injury I've done playing football, where I've done a hairline fracture on my leg. Are you listening to me saying that, thinking about the horrific injuries you've done?
No, but do you know what the most horrific thing is? Is you're in a cast.
Yeah.
Because you can't do nothing about it.
No.
And
I thought you were about to say my toes. I was going to...
No, but genuine, I broke my femur in 2013.
That's already way worse than I feel. Pretty, I feel like a dick with this one.
Miraculous. Luckily, it was done in Germany. The surgeons were incredible. So I was straight in, operated on a Sunday. Within, I want to say within a week, I rode my bicycle outside in the Isle of Man.
Now, why would you tell me that? Because I did this 2 weeks ago.
But you know why?
I...
because your bone's still broken inside there. They haven't fixed your bone. So naturally, they're waiting for the heal. Where they basically cut me open with a zip down my leg, hammered down in a big, big nail, put 2 screws into my knee, 1 into my hip. I've got it at home, framed.
Since it's come screws?
Out. Yeah, I'll send you a picture after. But so you're not walking on the broken bone, you're walking on the...
Yeah.
You're walking on the nail.
But here's the difference in me and you. If they had have done that to me, I wouldn't have left the house for 6 months. I would not have thought to go out on my bicycle.
No, but it's that mindset. I had to do it. I had to walk within a couple of days.
Right.
Actually, the surgeon came around. I was still plugged up to my wee morphine buzzer.
Oh, yeah.
And he told me to... get out of bed. I said, what do you mean get out of bed? Like, I've broke my leg. He said, no, you can get out. And then he pulled me up off my bed and he says, let me go. He says, now walk to me.
Right.
I was like, I couldn't believe what he was thinking. And then so I took a step, and that was enough because I was on my back for a few days.
Yeah.
But even getting a shower back then after like anesthetic and stuff was tough. But
what's the worst injury you've ever done coming off the bike?
Possibly that for pain.
Right.
But I've had knee injuries, like cruciate ligaments, which never heal that well. And you've always have wee operations to tidy them up, or cartilage or whatever. They're like the most recurring, because once you do a joint, like a knee or a shoulder, it's never 100%, where a bone will heal really good again.
Yeah.
Probably stronger than it ever was.
See, I've heard this before, right? And I understand that. But then I'm thinking like, why don't I just break every bone? Like, why don't I clear like a couple of months in my diary? Like, fall off, like, not like a cliff, but, you know, like a high sofa. Like, and try and break
it. You'd be almost unbreakable then after?
Yeah, because then I'll be like Iron Man after it.
You just wouldn't be popular at home, would you?
No, that wouldn't be. And that'd be a nightmare if you were like full.
Yeah.
Have you done an injury like that where you've been like full casts kind of?
No, but I did... talking about being a bit of a burden at the end of a season once. I finished my last race and I was living in the Isle of Man, so years ago, 2012 rings the bell, and my wife was looking forward to the weekend after the last round. We were going out, I think we had a Chinese booked, and we were going out after, but I'd done a motocross race that year, or that day, that morning, and I got a severe dead leg. I felt like I'd broke my femur again, and I got home and I got... She read me up, went absolutely mental. Like, I'd ruined her life, not her weekend, her life. Yeah. And it was disastrous. So I made a big effort. Stupidly had a hot bath. Don't know why I had a hot bath, but that made it worse. And then so a load of painkillers, and I thought, well, I'll make the effort here. So I rang my mate up. He had a crutch. He says, can I come and borrow your crutch? And I went to his house, and his dad says, you need to get to the hospital.
Yeah.
Because... that's not good. And I went to the hospital. They sobered me up straight away and told me they're preparing a theatre. They're going to do a...
Were you still thinking about a chow mein at this point?
So they're going to open me up to release the fascia for compartment syndrome.
Right.
So I'd almost ruined my own life, not just her night.
Did you get the Chinese?
No.
Oh, that's a nightmare.
I spent the night in the hospital.
Yeah, I mean, the whole idea, yeah, it's inconvenient going about, but then, I play football, so if I injure myself playing football, it's never going to be too bad. What speed could you theoretically be coming off a bike at?
So, when I broke my leg That was the second time I told you about in 2004.
I had to quit. See, the first time, I had to quit.
My brakes failed, and I was probably traveling at 160 miles an hour.
Not ideal.
Not ideal. And say the runoff area was about three lanes of like motorway, like literally 20 meters deep was the gravel trap, and then you hit a tire wall, and that's obviously what hit the impact. When you hit that, that breaks your bone. And that was the most horrific and fastest
100.
Injury I've had. I actually had an engine brake in Phillip Island in Australia. It's a turn three, which is fifth gear, pretty wide open on a superbike, doing 160. So the engine broke, and there was oil leaking over the rear tire. So that's like, I'm like hooking gears, fourth, fifth gear, and tip in, and there's oil in the rear tire, and just like flicked me really hard. And like,
the fact that racers just get back on, like, your first thought is to get back on if you can. Like, you see people come off and then see if they can salvage the bike and get a hand.
Bit like that. That's why.
That's a crazy mentality, though.
Say, I love football. My kids are mad about football, but I hate the drama of appealing for a free kick or a yellow card when you think, mate, you've been tapped. You know what I mean? Not broke.
Oh, you mean like the rolling around after?
Aye, and the big drama. It's
I do
like,
that.
You do that. Disaster. Don't do that. That's
I'll roll a minimum of 10 times.
Don't be like Shane. It's disastrous.
But I know exactly what you mean. It's like, yeah, like the football.
I guess you're acting to get something in your favour, where we think, fuck, I've lost points in a championship, I need to salvage something.
Yeah.
Like run with your dead leg. Or I had a teammate, we do this endurance race called the Suzuki 8-hour race, and he broke his leg.
Right.
And it's an 8-hour race, and I'm competitive. I only want to win. Where the Japanese want you to finish, like, it's an honour to finish that race.
Yeah.
So when he crashed, he's like trying to bring the bike back, and afterwards we found out he broke his leg. You're thinking, mate, don't bring the bike back. Yeah. Last thing I want to do is ride around for 50th. You know what I mean? Yeah. After the repair of the bike. Yeah.
I thought I was mad for hitting a corner after I did this.
Yeah. But no, you know what?
Here was a good corner. No joke. See, if I had gone in, I'd be talking about this way more. Other people would be talking about this.
But do you know what we enjoy that you want? The medical assistance trackside.
Right.
You see, within minutes, you feel even better than you did before you started the race.
Well, to be fair, I had a pensioner with a bottle of water squirting it over this. I was like, cheers, mate, that'll fix the brake.
And in Australia, they have this, I crashed once in Australia and testing a private test, and they give me a whistle. It's a wee whistle you suck on. And so they basically soak this foam or like cotton wool or something into the end of the whistle in morphine, I guess.
Right.
Mad stuff.
Nice.
Mad stuff.
Nice. There was fellas offering me ease on the sideline after this, but it wasn't because it was injured. They're just there.
It's in your corner.
Yeah. do you enjoy tea?
I do enjoy tea. I prefer coffee now, to be fair.
You enjoy coffee now? Do you think that's because you've spent so long traveling
in Europe,
the world?
In Europe, I never drunk coffee. Never ate tomatoes either.
They were your two rules. You had two rules in life. Are you on the tomatoes now?
Yeah.
Flat out?
not really.
Coffee,
no.
And the tomato? Every day.
I told my home economics teacher I was allergic to them.
Can you be? Do you think that's a thing?
No.
But what's made you come around to tomatoes now?
Don't know.
One day you just fucking...
I can't go.
Do you think you're on the world stage and there's people that went to school who are you watching you going, people are like, fuck that, he's just one section row. People going, he's allergic to tomatoes.
We never ate tomatoes at school because of him.
Oh, no one was allowed to bring them in. I hated that when someone was like, you're not allowed to bring nuts in. I'd have just brought them.
On flights, I do that.
What, you'll still open a bag of peanuts? Yeah, for sure. Because, like, you know, come on. It's not real.
Can't smell them. You're not going to, like, have a fit for smelling my cashews, are you?
What do you bring? Like, if you're, you know, when the season starts and you're traveling all around the world, is there anything from home you bring with you? Like tea bags or?
Not really. A pillow.
Bring your own pillow?
I bring a pillow to hotels or...
What, like memory foam or something?
No, it's actually a pretty standard cheap pillow. I don't really like them.
It's just a pillow you like?
Yeah.
And you bring it everywhere?
Yeah.
I like it. Like most people have the Louis Vuitton wash bag under the arm. You're just walking in can of tomatoes.
What else from home? After a wee bit, in my motorhome, there's a big name drop here. A good friend of mine has a furniture company here. Balmoral Furniture builds mattresses.
Right.
And he built, I got a mattress for my house and it was so good. I says, oh, could you make me one for my motorhome? It's like a hotel in Wales, pretty much. So he done one for that. So I guess that's taking something from home.
See, here's why I couldn't be a professional motorbike racer. Well, there's many reasons. My dad was a road racer.
Was he?
Dennis Todd.
Right.
My dad was a motorbike racer for...
What age your dad be now?
72. He looks somewhere between 48 and 104.
My dad's...
He'd race with your dad.
I want to say he's coming 60, I say he, or
I'm sure
60.
He would have raced for your dad. But he did Northwest, raced, did it all for, I think he raced for 20
years. So you'd agree
years.
Up around following him around then, I guess?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because he's like, he's 70 odd now, but I was very young when he was racing. And when I was 3, he had a real bad accident.
Mm.
I should know where, I don't know, car door or something. Bishop's Court, I don't know. And but he's a road racer and he broke his neck, his back, I mean everything you could think of. And he never, although I sort of grew up around bikes, he actively didn't
I
was never on a bike as a kid. I went in a scrambler once and thought I thought I had a flair for it. For the first time I went in a scrambler, it was about 8 or 9. Yeah. And then I watched a video of me on it back and realised I didn't have a flair for it. I was going 3 miles an hour in a
field.
That's
normal. I feel like that. You know, right. Like, we go riding all the time and I'd send a photographer or a mate to get a picture. Oh, I'll go to this jump. I'm going to like give it a nice big whip. And then I see the picture. I feel like I'm supercross hero. Right. And then I see the picture. I'm like such an amateur.
But I, like he like made sure, I think, that I didn't get into bikes because he, like, you know, he tells me, and loads of people tell me, your dad was brilliant, you know, and like he showed me all these, but he fell off a lot of times.
Mm.
Like a lot. Like I think he thought that was one of the object, like that was, you know, a good thing, but he had so many, so I never got into it. But you look at, you know, you talk about the motorhome and the comfort. I'm sure when you were starting, you didn't have that level of comfort.
Anything but that.
But when you go around the pits at some of these races, once you get to the edge of the pitch, you see fellas, it's maybe a 2-man operation.
Mm.
He's borrowed someone's van. There's maybe a mattress in the back. And it's just, like, I don't really like the cold or it. Like, I like, you know, when you just see how much goes into it, you know, and it might just be the rider and the mechanic, or sometimes the
own stuff. That's how we started doing motocross.
You're from Larne?
Yeah, outside of Larne. You ever heard of Kilwater? You're too young.
Davidoff? That's an offshoot.
Kilwater, aye. Remember that.
Davidoff, Kilwater.
So here's pretty national landmark in the late 80s, early 90s rave scene, Kilwater House Hotel.
I was on my way home from a gig and got talking to someone about this and I didn't know if they were making it up, so I'm glad that you've told me that this is real.
True story.
It was like an old country house.
When I say small hotel.
Right.
Actually looked like Crawfordsburn.
Yeah.
Like that kind of old,
right,
old way.
And this is middle of nowhere sort of thing?
I think Crawfordsburn Hotel with Coachbahn Bridge attached to it.
Right.
It was big deal.
Right.
Load of funny stories there growing up. Because we, like, literally my garden, our wee garden, ran onto the hotel lawns. And so we would see, like, all sorts going on. We actually had this wee wooden house, like a Wendy house, they called it, like a playhouse outside.
Yeah. I like the way you said you had a Wendy house and then changed it really quickly to playhouse.
Why do they call them Wendy? That's what my mom called it when I was young. So we'd have had outdoor toys, just storage stuff. And find all sorts in there.
Well, people like
fivers, condoms, a belly chain.
Oh, why?
Like
that's very 90s, isn't
imagine
it?
Imagine walking this into your mum. Wait, what's this, mum? So, belly chains.
Mum, do you want to have a water balloon fight? Like, no, that's not.
Another true story. So, my aunt and uncle, when I was really young, were babysitting me for mum and dad were out having dinner, a date, whatever. They come home, and dad reckoned I was snoring. So he's like, he's walking upstairs thinking, why is he heavy breathing? He's only 3 years old. And he found somebody sleeping on the landing of the stairs, and he kicked him stupid out of the house.
From, like, they'd walked from, over from one of the raves?
Got drunk from, walked down the garden, pretty much into our house, and fell asleep. But there'd be busloads of people at Coldwater. Big
but
deal.
But people will come from Miles, Belfast, it was all
like,
over.
It was like Kelly's, but in Coldwater.
And did you witness, like, were you, what, did you able to look at all, like, see this from where you lived?
Yeah. Like,
you must have seen some states.
Oh, wait. There was a guy. Yeah, it was brilliant.
You can but say anything in this podcast, by the way. So if you're thinking anything and you're like, I might be be able to say it, you can say
I'm
it.
I'm going to say, I'm thinking of it because the bike I was riding was a 60cc. So it must have been 10. My dad and my mate's dad were out in the garage working at the bikes, having a few beers late on a Friday or Saturday night. And we were running around. It was like woods, trees everywhere. So we were running around the woods, me and my mate and his big brother. And we seen these two like snogging the face off each other. And I don't know why we let out one of these whoop whoop. And they chased us. They chased us down through the woods. They had no idea where they were going, but they chased us until. And I was, me and Philip's big brother, Chris, got back to the garage first, screaming. Philip needs help. And they caught my mate Philip with the scruff of the neck. I don't know what they're going to do to him.
Yeah, yeah.
But my dad was stood there with
a
hammer.
For a whoop whoop, like.
But I don't know. So my dad had a hammer in his hand. And he says, put him down now. And they let him go. But I was brilliant. But it's a shame because I think it's now housing.
Right, right.
And I was derelict for years. But it was definitely happening in my childhood. It was cool.
Is road, like bike racing big where you are? Like how did you?
No, just because my dad raced. And
see, you, that's the difference in me and you. I've gone to races with my dad. I've looked at that and gone, oh, no. And you've looked at that going, it looks like a bit of crack.
Everything from, like, the
was your dad road racer?
Both. Circuits and road racing. So he did. And he competed around the UK, but he was made his sort of name here and, like, done pretty well. I think he reckoned, like, prize monies and stuff. And
you won a TT? Your dad won a TT?
Won an Isle of Man TT, yeah. So prize monies and bonus monies, like, furnished the family home. Or maybe bought the family home or made all the renovations to it.
Right.
So he had done, I think he'd done really well. Never got the chance, like an opportunity, because our sports, it's super expensive. And there's not a lot of opportunities now for kids, which is sad because it's not as bad as F1, for example, but it's a wealthy man's sport.
Yeah.
And we got into talking about, I have a nice big fancy motorhome now, but when we rode the, like in British motocross, we used to get one of my dad's little distribution vans, like a medium wheel brace sort of sprinter. It was a Fate Ducato. And because he's in transport, you know, these pallets have upright stakes in the end to hold textiles.
Yeah.
We would just overturn one of them.
Right.
Put our mattress on top of it. And you'd woke up in the morning with the condensation from the van coming down on you.
Yeah.
But they were the best days.
I was going to say, like, that must have been great crack, like traveling as a kid. And
in the summer, power washer, like, and all the, say all the English, most, like, we went there because we travelled for a good competition, and they're all big fancy motorhomes and showers and whatnot. And we had this Coke bottle with the drilled holes in the bottom of it and taped it to the power washer,
right,
to make a shower.
Right.
So we were showering like after races and like it was great times, good fun.
And when you were doing that, when you were travelling in those early days, was this something you saw as a future career, or was it just a hobby then? Like, what was your...
It was a hobby, but I wanted to be a motocross rider.
Right.
More than what I do now, like a superbike rider.
Yeah.
I felt like road racing was boring, you know, because there's no jumps and the track's just the same every lap.
Yeah, I mean, that's looking at it from a rider's point of view, because when I look at it, I'm like, you're on the... Like, I also don't think people from outside of here or people that don't know road racing, I don't think they understand. It's on the roads. Like, it's on the public roads that you go on. And those speeds are...
That's mad.
I didn't ever understand... Like, say you sit in a grand... I sat in a grandstand and watched that. You'd still don't get... It's just like... It doesn't make sense. They're going fast and quick. And we stood for... I think it was maybe a Northwest. And I've not been to many races at all. But we stood in a bank. And our eye level was level with the road. So we're sort of in a sunken bank.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was only then... That I really got a sense of the speed, and it's still, you would never have.
Because that's where you get the sense of the speed is live, because TV doesn't do it justice. And then if you do it yourself, honestly, see, once you've your helmet on and your earplugs, it's a wee happy place. Like, you wouldn't... I rode pit lane speed limit, I think's 60k, and it's 40 mile an hour. Right. 60k, is that right?
I'd be the last person that would know that.
I think it's 40 mile an hour, and literally you feel like you're walking.
Right. But I would feel... But if that was me, I'd feel like I was going 200 mile an hour.
You feel so slow. But because, like, in Monza, we'd do... Monza, the F1 track, big, long, long front straight. You'd do 208 mile an hour. And it's in a little...
And you're describing that as your happy place. You know, you're just...
not a happy place, but...
I know, but you're
nice and warm.
You're calm. You're...
Like, good leathers, keeping you warm, hands. And all you're thinking about, all you're focused on, is you see your pit board going past, because it's start-finish straight. And you're just focused on... I think it's the 300-yard marker.
Right.
That's my break point for that turn one, first gear corner. So all you're thinking about is there and back to sixth. So you're focused on... And it's not like warp speed. Like, yeah, things are coming. It's just actually really... Like driving down Main Street.
I just can't... Well, of course you can't, and not many people can understand
speed
that.
Speed is not the deal. It's actually... The hardest thing is changing direction. Because they think... Somebody's got, it's like some sort of arcade game,
yeah,
like on the PlayStation, and you just turn the handlebars. But literally, bike's 175 kilos.
Right, that's what I bench. But.
And you're good lad. And you're so you're at 208 mile an hour, and you're stopping the first gear, which is probably 50 mile an hour chicane, 40 mile an hour chicane, very slow. So the G forces is ridiculous. Then trying to go through a fast chicane. At maybe in third gear, 100 mile an hour, changing that weight from left to right is hard. Like, my heart rates are ridiculously high. I do all my effort tests and fitness tests, and I can't even simulate the same heart.
Is it almost
heart rates as that I do when I race?
Do more accidents happen when you're going slower, like in the likes of corners and that sort of thing?
Yeah, mostly.
Yeah,
yeah. They don't high speed accidents don't happen unless you collide with somebody, which is not unheard of, but
yeah,
rare. Normally, it's the most common crash is, we call it losing the front, where you crash on the front, either too much brake or too much lean angle or whatever, but that's right close to the apex of the corner. And honestly, with these airbags in our suit now, so you blow up, like, literally all my torso area down to my arm here, all my front chest and around my neck, just,
that
it's got this wee gyro sensor. I don't know how it knows you're going to crash before you crash, but some sort of movement, that'll inflate before an impact. So see the DOMS afterwards, from you just to feel like you're in a wash machine. Now,
is the amount of weight that you're moving and also carrying?
No, I mean, like, after you've had a crash, normally the next day you wake up feeling rough as hell, like you've been in a wash machine, where now with this airbag, it sort of keeps you all together. And
I drive with that airbag already inflated.
Would you?
I think 1,000%.
I know plenty of people that look like they've got an airbag all the time.
How did you go from those days of, you know, traveling the UK or wherever it was, and, you know, the Coke bottle shower, really? How did you go from that to being professional? Like, what was the point of your life where you realised that actually this might be a career?
Pretty early I realised... going from motocross to road race. So I got this opportunity. It was like a newspaper ad, and they were looking for young riders, rookie riders. So I applied for it. My dad had fell out of love.
What was the paper, do you remember?
It was called Motorcycle News. It's weekly English paper.
Yeah, I remember that being the house.
So it was a full back page thing, and all I seen was worth 75 grand. I thought my Christmas had come, but that was the budget it took to run. You didn't get paid.
Yeah.
So I got this pretty much free ride, because I sent a pretty cute CV. I had 40 words to describe myself, so I did it in bullet point. You know what I mean?
Do you remember any of the words?
I know. So I...
hates tomatoes.
Anyway, so it's like... it was like X Factor. I remember there being like, I want to say 30 or 40 riders at a selection day, and then you whittled it down to 5 and went to Spain, and they selected me there.
What age were you?
16.
Right.
But that was late to the road race game. Like, these kids were young. And I realised quite quick I was good. But, and it wasn't that difficult. It wasn't as difficult as the other riders were let's say, because coming from motocross, I was riding a bike with a clutch and gears from, you're like 8 years old or 10 years old. So you're in, come to sport then where you feel like sometimes it's more dad's dream and mom's dream than the kid.
Yeah.
So I just find all this experience helped me. I quite natural took to road racing, and then within a couple of years, my results were decent. I had that leg injury, set me back. And then I actually qualified in pole position for a British superbike race that was here in Dublin, in Mandela Park.
You still a teenager at this point?
On my first ever year on a superbike against, yeah, I was a teenager. I think it was, I'll say 17 or 18. I think it's the youngest ever pole position. It didn't last long. I got took out in turn one by
like somebody else?
Yeah, by somebody else. So, but then I realized then I was fast, but I was crashing a lot and not doing too well. And then I got my first, like mom and dad were always very strict that I went to work. So I went and worked in a, like an engineer, my uncle's an engineering company. So I did day release to do a manufacturing engineering degree. And they were like, until you get us, like, I had a wee bit of sponsorship coming through, but not enough to call it a job.
Yeah.
So until you get a salary, you're going to work. So I done that in 07. I got like a salary to race in the British Championship, and then done that for a year with a factory team, and then I went to World Championship in 2008, and I've been there since.
So you own, not that you fell into the sport by accident, but
locked into it.
Yeah.
Like by applying to a news, because if I didn't get that, like we're like working class family. Mm-hmm. Like mom and dad worked hard and we could never afford to do something like that.
Yeah.
I was literally, if I didn't get that job, I was planning to do motocross again.
Because probably. Like you said, most riders probably around that time were, you know, your age would have been the family have bought them a bike and put a bit of money
doing
into
it hard at that. Or now it's like there's a lot of pay as you go rides. Like you have to bring a big amount of money to the team,
right,
and then they'll run you.
Yeah,
that's becoming more and more popular. But back in 03 04, I just got really lucky to get into it and fell on my feet, really.
What was the first time you came off, when you sort of, when you went pro, when
no
when
the first on the audition? I thought I blew it. So right. When they were selecting, when it was like 30, we're all at this track in the UK, and it was a pretty crap day. I remember there being wet patches everywhere, and we had a borrowed bike and had my dad's old borrowed leathers and stuff. And I went out and I was passing loads of people on my first go. I thought, whoa, I'm on it here. And I'd done a test day before. Like my dad got me some, went to a race school in England, the Ron Haslam Race School. So I'd rode, so I knew what tyres felt like and whatnot. So I was flying this first out, and then the second out, I was like passing everybody. I felt like the fastest there, and then I crashed. I thought, oh no, we didn't have enough spares to fix the bike. So I thought I fucked it, blew it. So we're driving home the whole way up that A75 up to Cairn Ryan Boat, and got a phone call saying that they want me to be in the last five. So
they'd seen the potential before.
But I crashed on my first day riding.
Yeah. And is that maybe something they look at and go, well, he's willing to go that fast? That he?
Well, maybe not. I think they secretly like the idea of taking someone with no experience.
Right.
Because all the other kids have maybe had a couple of years of club racing or doing whatever.
Yeah.
But I'd literally gone from Desert Martin motocross track to Donington Park.
Was there ever, when you were getting into it more professionally and more seriously, was there ever, did you ever sort of think about the, you know, because growing up with your dad racing and knowing so many people, you know, you probably, like my dad would have shown me race programs back in the day, and he would point out at some point, well, he's not with us anymore.
Yeah.
He's not. You know, and sometimes it can be a photo of my dad and four other, and there's two of them.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, videos, hey, I don't know why. They obviously had loads of coverage back then, but he's loads of videos, and he could, you're better naming the people that are still around.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
did that play in your mind at any point?
Not really. No, it's a sick mindset, really. Because
I suppose if it does,
because I have two kids as well now, and horrible to say this, but I love them being around and whatnot, but then you put your helmet on and you don't think about nothing. You don't think about, have I left the gardens cut, or have, I wonder, are they enough food, or wonder where they're going to be watching. Like, you literally put your helmet on, you're like two people.
Yeah.
It's like,
I mean, obviously on a far different level and scale, but I can equate that to being on stage and performing.
Yeah. Like,
if if any other thought enters your mind, like you're not in the zone, you shouldn't be up there and doing it. You can, it's adrenaline. Yeah. It's
and adrenaline, and that's why I was telling you earlier about heart rates. Like literally, when I pull the zip and my leathers up, I've used my wee computer and put it in my hump with my heart rate strap on. And my coach just stood beside me saying, breathe. I said, why? He says, you're like 110 beats a minute.
Yeah.
And I'm just sat in my chair, done doing nothing.
But I suppose if you, it could be dangerous so if you didn't have that.
So it's adrenaline.
And if then, you didn't have the adrenaline.
Maybe.
That's, if I don't feel slightly nervous or adrenaline going on stage, I know it's not going to be a good one.
Yeah.
The times see, when you know you have to have a good yeah. one.
See, I love that. And I think it's a wee bit of, not to big up ourselves here, but I think coming from here, you get even more of that.
You know, yeah, I think like you always have an underdog mentality.
And you like your back being against the wall.
Yeah.
And I like that.
But the worst, I mean, if it goes wrong for me, the worst thing that's going to happen is, you know, 80 people in Armagh in a wee theatre go, nah, I didn't love that. You know, there's no, the jeopardy is nowhere near as bad, whereas you are going at such high speeds and...
Aye, but emotionally it can be tough.
I think you're built different.
I'd rather take a big high side than people walking out on me on stage. I'd get over that a lot quicker.
It's I think you just are obviously built different. The only time I've experienced speed on a bike is whenever I was about 14. My dad took me out on his mate's bike around Craig Antler around Hollywood, and I'm talking single lane country roads. The guy was going 90. Now my dad is the most careful driver of his car you could ever meet, and has never really had his own bike since he retired, because he doesn't enjoy not if he's on a bike, he wants to race. And he took me out, he said, to really scare me and put me off it once and for all. Now, I was never going to get into, I'd shown no interest in bikes, and my dad was like, I'll throw you on here, we'll go out for a wee run. He's going 90. I was calling him everything in the helmet, he obviously couldn't hear me, get off, my legs are like jelly. He said, You'll not be a racer. I was like, I know, I could have told you that before we did this.
But that's mad. Like, anything could happen. Cow shit in the road.
Yeah.
Somebody could reverse out in front of you.
Yeah.
Anything. Like, what I do, it's in a controlled space. I mean, you can't control the other people you race with.
Yeah. Yeah. But,
the laws of, it's pretty all right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Airbags, decent helmets.
You're saying the PSNI should investigate?
Friggin' right. Yeah. But you know, what's worse, my dad was the same. He used to, with race bikes, and they'd get something new and he'd have to run it in, so he'd take it around the local road to Coldwater or whatever, and he'd have this farmer beside us, he'd have this route that if the police ever caught him or found him in the roads, he would lose them and park the bike in the farmer's shed,
right,
quickly leathers off, and then walk down to the house because they'd know, oh, that's Johnny Ray out there, they'd be back waiting for his, they'd be parked in the lawn. And my dad dandering down from the garage. Telling them, boys, were you out in the roads? No. And he would take me out sometimes. And I'd be, my helmet on. Dad, don't go faster than six. You know, six was 6,000 RPM.
Right.
Because as soon as it would get to that, I'd get dead nervous. Yeah. But yeah, it was, but that's mental.
But that's the only way back in the day people could practice and really give bikes a run out was if you're a road racer, was the roads. Just, I remember the Dunlops always seeing documentaries about them. And they were really going for it on the roads around Ballymoney, like, and because you had to.
Well, my dad wouldn't go for it. He was just running his bike in, just in case.
Right, yeah.
In case I throw my dad under the bus here.
Now, I actually have...
Visit him once a week.
I
Sorry, Dad. Busted you. How far back can the police
he's
go?
He's going to be in McGalbry tonight. He's going to be in McGalbry tonight. Oh, the historical team will get him for sure. Him and my dad will be sharing a cell. They can talk about bikes. It'll be sweet. I've actually, I mean, like your femur, I'm sure you've done some terrible injuries, but on a bike, I've done a pretty bad one.
Have you?
Mm-hmm. See this wrist?
Holy shit.
Yeah. I was a biker accident, push bike, like.
Really? Really?
Yeah. I was cycling down to a mate's house when I was about 19, and the front end, you know yourself, front end went. I was doing about 12 mph, and just whatever way the handlebars went, I went over the top, landed with my hand like this, and the bone just went through my hand. But I had a hoodie on with my sleeves up, so I didn't know that bone. I was fine until I got home.
And was it broke?
I swear to God, the doctor described it as fucked. The doctor. at Dundonald A&E said, that is fucked. I was like, well, that's not made me feel any better. But
you could probably tell that yourself, though.
Oh, it was looking at me like, I felt fine until I took the jacket off and saw the bone, and then I near fainted and passed out. But when I went to Dundonald, to the Ulster A&E, the receptionist was like, what have you done? I said, oh, I've fallen off my bike and I've done this. And she said, motorbike? And I went, yeah.
Yeah, it's safer. I have it. Bicycles now, big, some horror crashes.
Well, it's weird to me that you cycle as a hobby, because I'd be thinking, just going at that speed, not...
Well, bad knees. So running is training, like cardio training is not the best.
Right.
So cycle's like low impact, so yeah. I do a lot of cycling.
Well, and you just got your motorbike license last year?
Last year, yeah.
What was going through the examiner's head you showed up?
I didn't think... It sort of takes, like, if I made a, I did do it right, and I had really good training, but I thought it'd be pretty ballsy to fail me.
Yeah, I suppose you're a good trainer. Being a six-time World Superbike champion is probably good training for your.
But then I also thought fuck, maybe he'd see this as like his career maker. You know what I mean?
I failed Johnny
Superbike rider.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was like two minds. I was around Ballymena, around loads of roads I didn't really know. So, but I got through it. But
that's crazy. I didn't have that.
I got a bike from Corey and Kawasaki, actually. And it's done no miles. I'm like a fair weather, right? Even in the bicycle.
Right.
You see the people. I do a lot of riding the indoor trainer, just. Mm-hmm. You see people like all like waterproofed up out in all elements, like big
all
respect.
The gear. Yeah.
I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
Fair weathered.
Yeah. I mean, cycling is something, like, obviously, since your wrist, I wouldn't be on a bike anymore after that high speed accident. I'm actually lucky to be here, but, and I'm doing a podcast with a broken foot. But it's warriors like us that just get on with it.
Yeah.
You know, we just get on with it.
You have to.
You've got to get back on the bike. I haven't been back on the bike since.
You see, I'm like that. But I do think that adversary helps you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you can't wrap... We have two young kids, and you can't wrap them in cotton wool. It's my missus' worst nightmare, thinking our boys ride bikes.
Yeah.
And they can ride, and I encourage them to ride.
I suppose if you really held it back, that would make them almost more attractive to do. You know, if you were like, you're never getting on a bike, you know, your kids might then want
maybe
even more
I had the shits with the eldest one once, because he'd always want to ride. So we'd take him somewhere, and he'd just have a Davis drop, like, I'm not riding. You're like... Drove an hour and a half to get here.
Set it all up, obviously.
So I put a wee bit of pressure on him. It didn't really work. So the second one, I'm playing a game right now with him. He's like, I don't want to write that. I was like, that's all right. Because it might come round.
Yeah.
But they're mad into football, and there's not a football in my family. I started playing with a load of dads from kids' school. So I'm thinking turn up to the first night that I've been asked along. They've been playing for years. I'll be a load of big... fat old blokes, you know, like really old,
yeah,
because they've got kids and all.
Yeah.
And then I realized like they're all super young, super good, like,
yeah,
not semi-pro, but
yeah, good level,
really good level of football. So I can't kick a ball. I played rugby at school,
right?
But I've got a terrible first touch, but I'm fast,
right? Yeah.
I don't think I'm the weakest,
right?
But I'm not good. So yeah. I asked one of the other dads, cool dad, can you help me out a wee bit? And we went to Mollusk playing fields there, took loads of cones and steaks, taking it dead serious on a few Tuesdays. So I've got a wee bit of skill now. I can control the ball. I used to just run with the ball.
Is that your competitiveness, do you think, and in wanting to be really good
at something
you do?
So I don't generally, apart from golf and this football, I don't tend to do stuff that I'm not good at,
right?
But I'm really not good at football.
If I were you, every week that you play, I'd show up in my motorcycle boots and go, you said wear boots every week. Every week I would be going with that. Do you wear your helmet?
Wednesday. Wednesday nights, I was clean on goal. And I put the ball over the net. I think automatically that gives the other team a goal. The way they work, the rules, if you put the ball over the 3G pitch, they get a goal.
Get them, no, change that.
Like,
kicks it,
no,
gets
it's just
absolutely.
It's just a goal kick. Like, but yeah, they got a goal.
Do three corners a penalty. I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah. What?
Three corners a penalty.
Is that right?
Well, it's just an interpretation of it where, like, instead of giving a corner, no one wants to take a corner and five a side.
No.
If it goes behind for a corner three times, then that team get a penalty. That's fair enough, three-corner penalty. Yep. Three-corner penalty is quite universally accepted. All
right, I'll try and...
I'm trying to bring it in.
I'm new in this group, so I'm, like, tiptoeing in. Can't really suggest stuff.
Make a statement.
To WhatsApp... It's a WhatsApp group as well. It's not active. I've got loads of groups that are so active, and this one's not. So I feel like it's a cool dad group, you know, that I'm not really...
Just write open lads, it right now three and say, three corners...
I can.
Just say, what about three corners?
I'll not be asked back.
And then send a picture of all your trophies. Say... Hey guys, been playing sport for a while. Three corners a penalty? Question mark.
Sport. You know, I haven't been playing football for a while. Because the first weeks I was getting loads of service. Like, oh, I'm free and free. Like Wednesday night, I was clearly way more free than he was down there, and the ball doesn't come to me.
Hey, I know the feeling. there must be a couple of guys there, maybe who like, you know, play as a one-off or whatever, who maybe might not know who they're playing against. But like, if I was playing against you, I would be so scared
to kick
you in any way.
They're not. I brought a guy down the penalty box last night badly, myself.
Right.
But they're tough.
They go for it?
Yeah.
That's not my kind of game.
No. I wouldn't say they're aggressive. They're not slide tackling and stuff like that, but they're
right.
Like aggressive, like shoulder bars and like big ones.
Yeah.
British Bulldog sort of stuff at school, like coming in at you.
Yeah. I hate that. See, British Bulldogs, when people played that at school, I'd just be the adjudicator.
Would you?
I'd stand on the clipboard and do your stats. I'd give you your stats after it.
That prepped me for rugby.
Right, right, right.
Secondary school then.
I played rugby touch.
Did you?
Exclusively.
I was a scrum half.
Right.
But then I stopped playing because on Saturdays, they played, I think in third year, you start playing Saturday mornings.
Yeah,
third
yeah,
or fourth
yeah.
year.
Yeah.
I was a motocross then, so.
Right. What is the support like you get from home, and has it like, as in from Northern Ireland, and has it like, was it there at an early point, like when you started in the superbikes, were people really paying attention here and like getting behind you, or did that come after a couple of years?
Yeah, I think it helped because my dad was raced and known here as doing all right, won a TT, so I wasn't really myself, I was Johnny Ray's son.
Yeah.
And then but we're pretty lucky back here because we had like a monthly magazine. There's a magazine called Irish Racer.
Yeah, it's I remember all these being in the house.
And Road Racing Ireland and all that.
Yeah.
So it was really well supported. And we're lucky compared to the UK that if I do well on a Sunday, it's back page news on a Monday or Newsline or UTV Sport, whatever it be. I guess it's the same at probably county level in the UK, you know, like the Yorkshire News will have whoever.
Yeah.
But so we enjoy that, but not really. Since I started winning world championships, there's been like traveling support where people would go to like a load of races, and like Superbike is the little brother to MotoGP that would attract 80,000 people. We'll maybe get 20, 30,000 people.
Yeah.
More and more recently, like Northern Ireland flags and people from home are everywhere.
You're
like
noticing far outnumber, and
far outnumber, just from a flag point of view, UK flags or Spanish or Italian, and that's pretty cool.
I think part of that might be, I don't know what you think, but I think part of that might be we're getting better at almost like celebrating achievement here.
Getting better, yeah.
Because we all, like, we're talking about the underdog mentality, but I think we also have a mentality of, like, if someone from here is doing well, you know, it's like, let's keep it to ourselves.
Aye. Or,
and not even in a negative way,
but suppress them.
Yes.
Like, my dad was a bit like that when I was growing up. He'd never like me celebrating. Like, when I was motocrossing, I want to do, like, a big one-hander over a jump or whatever.
Yeah.
He'd bollock me for that.
Right.
Where, you know, like, here, he's really good, him. Aye. He's not too bad. He's not half good. He's not too bad. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Or, I know exactly what you mean. But I'm sure you've had countless opportunities to go to MotoGP.
Not really. I've had loads of conversation, but I've never had a contract to sign.
Right.
Which is, not saying it's strange, like playing it down, but there was a few, like I could have gone there on a few rides, but it was bikes that finish last, like at the back, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And no matter how good you are, you put Valentino Rossi on that bike at the back, it's probably not going to win.
Yeah.
So I figure in Superbike, if you're going to move there, you're going to go with the right team and the right opportunity. I mean, from, I'm lucky in Superbike Kawasaki, they don't ride in MotoGP, so all their effort goes into us.
Yeah,
as a factory, and
as opposed to, do some teams have like their MotoGP team and then the Superbike team suffers as a result?
100% like that. But most manufacturers have both for Kawasaki, don't they? Invest a lot, and it's all, but it's more business as well. I went and did a couple of stand-in races for Casey Stoner, an Aussie guy. He broke his ankle, and they asked me would I go and replace him in 2012, and I had a 7th and 8th, and I thought, that's quids in,
yeah.
You know, like, but nothing,
right?
Like, I beat Valentino Rossi in the second round. He finished behind me. I was made my life.
You think like, well, that's it. You know, you're guaranteed.
Well, not really. I used to ride for Honda back then, and I thought they had a stepping stone to go there. But again, it was more political,
right?
Like the two satellite teams that Honda ran back then. One was a Spanish rider, Bautista, that was that I race with now. He was there, and he was on the podium the week before. In the second round, I raced with him the whole race. But the sponsor was there at the Italian race that he was on the podium. He got all excited. It's like, we'll have to sign him for next year. I'll sign a contract with your team, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
The other kid, he was a German guy at the other Honda team, and that came with a good bit of Honda money influence from Germany.
Yeah.
So there was no real push for me from a, like, it is pretty political. And like, everyone can say, oh, you should do this, you should do that. But it's like anything in life, you can only do what opportunities you have.
Yeah, yeah. And you want to be the best, and you want to be top.
You want to be good, and you want to be, yeah, exactly. So if I had my way, I'd pick the best bike in MotoGP and go and have a crack and see what I could do. But right now it's Superbike, and I've got a great team. Like, they're Spanish people, good people.
Do you speak Spanish?
No, understand a bit.
¿Por qué?
¿Por qué? ¿Por poco?
I don't even know. I don't even know what porque means.
Porque is like why.
Oh, right.
Or because.
Ah, I thought it meant a little bit.
Un poco.
Un poco.
Yeah. Or like,
yeah. See,
my team, they're Barcelona, so they're like Catalan.
Right. Right.
Which is
It's
like French, Italian, and Spanish all like in a wash machine, and like they say, merci for thanks.
Yeah.
But it's gracias.
Yeah.
Or, and they, strange.
Yeah, and I suppose that environment, like people from all over, riders from all over the world, when you're, you know, in superbikes, like in the pits, I'm sure that every language in the world is being spoken at some point.
Yeah, but we're so lazy here.
Right.
Because English is the international language.
Yeah.
So, like, I rode for a Dutch team for 6 or 7 years, and they speak better English than half of my family.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where, and the Spanish speak great English. Like, I think there's only one on the team that has broken English.
Right.
A lot of Italian influence in Superbike, but I don't really understand that.
Buongiorno.
Buongiorno.
That's all I can help you with. I want to ask you two things. One is BBC Sports Personality of the Year. There was a huge clamour for you to get that. It was like people were up in arms. Is that the year it was here? And specifically, I think the year it was here, maybe, unless I'm getting that wrong.
I'm not sure. The year I was runner up?
Yeah.
That was in Liverpool.
Oh, okay. Like, do you feel you should have won that? Because
no.
I think
No.
It all started, I think, Stephen Watson started threatening to beat people up. He's like, he's Sports Personality of the Year on Twitter. Winker was getting into it with people.
But everybody thinks Winker is Sports Personality of the Year, so all these fans are like wanting his head. He's nothing to do with it.
Yeah, but Winker's game for it. Like,
but it's a bizarre event. Nice event.
But like, it's just the fact that every year you were winning.
I think I didn't get it because I knocked them back the year before. So this is my third championship.
Yeah.
That won. I was invited there. I think it was the year before. When was it in Belfast? Remember? Was it 16?
Or it sounds about right.
Anyway, they've invited me just way to, years just before to, that, but it's...
Just to go to it? You mean they invited you just to... Right.
And these events are, like, nice to go to, but it's also nice to be at home with your family and have a weekend with your mates.
Yeah.
So for me, it was, I was like, right, sweet. Can my wife come? No, it's athletes only, one guest. I was like, sorry, I can't come. And then, so the year they told me, you're nominated though, you have to go. I was like, all right, can I bring like my wife? Yeah, you can bring like, I think I had Tosh beside me and I had like six mates.
Right.
And get friends. But it's a weird event. You know, you see it on TV and you see all the audience and the guests and the camera pans down. They're literally like, I'm in the second row and then they're picking me up to move because Torval and Dean are coming to sit here.
I wouldn't move for Torval and Dean.
And then
I don't respect that.
They're moving me, I'm on the front row and then I'm flipping six rows back. It's like every ad.
So
break,
it's choreographed. I think award ceremonies are like.
So, well, the ones I've been to aren't really, it's pretty much loads of beer and stuck in.
Yeah.
But that's mental. A load of athletes at the end of their season, the after party was mental.
Right. Because you can't blow off that steam during the season.
Like, I don't know whether it's because you're not allowed guests and nobody had wives and girlfriends there, but it's like wide open. I've never seen in that party.
Who have you seen blitzed? Give us a few names here. Like, who have you seen?
Can't really. There's one. Johnny. There's one that sort of
give us a clue.
Scarred me at night. It's like a D-lister. I want to say, I'll not mention their name, but
Callum Best.
Was he on Love Island?
Yeah, for just remember he's not an athlete.
So not that. So D-lister. You went straight for
what
him.
What sport?
Not a sport. A Love Island contestant was falling around everywhere. That's actually why they're here, because nothing to do. She was nothing to do with sports.
You're narrowing it down a wee bit.
From Bonnie Scotland, I think. Can't remember. I don't even know her name. Someone says, there's that bird from Love Island. Look at the stater. But
steaming.
But I don't know, like the gig, because it was in Liverpool. So she was in Scotland. Did she get paid to go there? Or why was she there? Or just a night out?
Yeah.
Instagram pictures or?
See, my policy on like, unless I was being honoured, I wouldn't like go to honored? Anything. Like, unless I was getting a lifetime achievement award at the BAFTAs or something, I wouldn't go. But that's my policy. I'm like, I don't go to awards things, but I've never been invited. I've never had the decline.
Like, no, so that, the BBC thing, I thought, so I was nominated, so I had to go anyway, which I was happy to go. But I thought, that's a great night out. I just didn't want to be last.
Right.
They changed everything. When I got runner-up, the next year, they selected the nominees. Like, they selected six of them.
Yeah.
Back when I was there, it was 12.
Right.
And I think, yeah, voting opened the night, but they changed loads of stuff. But I thought, well, as long as I'm not last, I'll be like happy enough. But imagine getting like 10 votes.
Yeah. But you came runner up.
Yeah.
Mo Farah.
Mo Farah.
You should beat Mo. What's he doing on the boat?
To be fair, I was.
It's not even me.
Mo got a load of good votes because his connection ran down. He was calling. He's doing a video feed. From somewhere, training camp probably, knowing Mo. He wasn't even there. But his kids were all climbing over him all in deer, and I should have had Jake and Tyler there, sat on my knee, this here. Yeah. Like, what a good daddy, eh?
Yeah.
But no, I just seen it as a night out, good reason for her to get into a dress and have a bit of food in the BBC and whatnot.
Yeah.
And turned out to be, I was telling her all night, stop. She's like voting away. Like, I don't know, like, texting around. I'm like, fucking not cool. Like, I sat beside Tyson Fury here. Put the phone down. You know what I mean?
Did you get chatting to him?
No. He's a big dude in real life.
Yeah. I spar with him.
No, it's actually a good. You spar with him? Did you? Actually?
Yeah.
No. I had, Mary Boy that does BBC Breakfast, Charlie Strait.
Yeah.
I had a load of beer with him.
Right.
Good dude.
Yeah. Nice to get on it.
Because I just see sports people. So I actually found him just interesting. So I was asking him loads about his stuff and his gig. And then I was on BBC. But that's TV, hard work that.
As in?
The other BBC, I was back at the BBC for something, breakfast. I'm not going to tell you the guy's name. But I sat on the couch at BBC Breakfast.
The presenter, is this you're talking
about? Holly was there and she was great. Holly Hamilton, but the guy in the studio.
So Trevor McDonald?
No. Trevor McDonald, does he even do BBC Breakfast?
Don't know.
He's like, all right. So I'm walking in from all the lights to the sofa. He's like, all right. So he's doing his piece. And as soon as the camera's out, he's on his phone. And then as soon as he's like getting his wee countdown or whatever, then he's back onto the camera. And Jonathan Ray sort of like, I'm like, you know, like you
warm someone up.
It's a pretty big deal. And I thought, just.
I know who it is.
Be a bit nicer.
I know who it is.
I'll not say yes or no.
I know. I think I know what his first name is. Dan. Yeah, it is. No, okay, doesn't matter who
yeah.
it is.
Was there, yeah.
It's either him or Callum. It's yeah, either him or like, Callum Best.
Have you got something about Callum Best?
No, because that's the thing. Me and Callum have a history.
Do you? What happened?
No, none at all.
Like celebrity football match or something?
Yeah. Oh, he did one at Windsor Park.
Did he?
Yeah, like about 4 years ago. And I tried to get the plane up.
But see, that's my next venture. I want to be invited, not to Spotty, but to play in a charity football match. Yeah. That's me.
What if we just hired Windsor Park and we'll just
me and you
play long balls to each other? Yeah? You could bring the cones.
Yeah. We could actually train there. I could get Gareth that helps me with my training to come down.
Like, if we asked together, we could get permission for that.
Yeah,
or just if you
go.
Asked by yourself. No. Actually, you'd be fine.
Like, we'll march in together.
Yeah, I'd love that.
That'd be cool.
We'll just hit shots and all.
Yeah, no, and let's get do it at night with the lights on.
Yes, we'll say it at Calm Best when we just break. The last thing I want to ask you about is like future plans and, you know, you'd won 6 in a row. The season that's just passed, came runner-up, and that probably brings a lot of questions about, you know, is that more motivation to go and win it? Or because you're someone...
You just pulled yourself back there, more motivation. I had a conversation yesterday, you'll not believe this. Or maybe this is where your question's going.
I don't know yet. I don't know where my question was going.
A guy I work with, he's not work with directly, but he's ringing me up to tell me he's retiring. I was like, oh, great. It's yesterday. Still spewing about it. Oh, great. Oh, thanks very much for all your help. And what about you? That'll be happening soon. It's like, oh, I'm not sure. He says, that Turkish boy last year, he was flying. I'm thinking, what are you joking me?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
My question is, does that add more motivation to win your title back?
I think so. A little bit.
But
motivation doesn't change. It's the same. It's almost, I'd say before it was the fear of losing because I was winning.
Yeah.
And it's automatic.
Yeah.
But it's not like, by the way, I loved your show with Carl.
Oh, great. Yeah.
But it's not like boxing where you like the character of Conor McGregor who can just mouth it off and back it up with his one big UFC fight a year. Like, we're going to get beat way more than we win because you're racing like 39 times a year, so you can't be beaten.
Yeah.
You can't not go unbeaten.
Yeah, of course.
So you get used to that, but I think it's the addiction to wanting to keep winning, and then you get beat, and that just keeps you coming back. And I think last year was a good wake-up call more for the team as well as me, because I knew how hard it was because I raced against these guys, but it's tough work. We need to keep improving, but I think motivation hasn't changed. I'm not more angry or more not training anymore or less.
Yeah.
But
could that be dangerous if you did suddenly get more motivated and you've more adrenaline going and you've a bit of anger in you? Can that be dangerous?
Probably,
to go into a race.
I used to put like, what sort of music is it?
What, like heavy metal?
No. I hate heavy metal. Like
country.
Nasty rap music on the start line. You're thinking, you know, like your 8 Mile Eminem sort of soundtrack.
Yeah.
And you just go and crash in turn one.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it doesn't, music doesn't work for me.
What do you listen to now? Enya?
Nothing.
Oh, right. Nothing. You just.
Well, I have a wee bit of background noise and I'm getting changed sometimes.
Bit of James Blunt.
I'm just very quiet. I hate talking to people on the grid. Just silence.
Yeah.
And go about my work. But now I think motivation's really good. And I've got, this is my last year of a contract, so I think within the next 3 or 4 months I'll know what's happening next year.
Mm-hmm.
Had not beef, but conversation with Tarsh at home about, you know, what's happening and
what
we're going to do. And because generally I'd spend 100 or plus minus 100 days away from home.
Mm-hmm.
And So I'm conscious of that as well with the kids, but I don't, whilst I'm doing well, I want to keep doing, like, keep at it.
Yeah.
And I don't, I want to get out in my own terms as well, which is really selfish because almost every racer has not a chip on their shoulder. Sometimes they decide to stop. Sometimes it's a lack of opportunity. Sometimes it's an injury that retires them. So you can never have the perfect ending.
Yeah.
But I don't see it right now.
Yeah.
In fact, I wanted to ask people that had retired. It was good, insightful for me listening to Carl talk as well about that. But he knew it was coming.
Yeah.
Where I don't feel it's coming.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's something that builds up like a train, or it hits you like a ton of bricks one morning you wake up.
Yeah.
But at the minute, the fire's burning hard and I'm ready to get stuck in.
That's good. I mean, also, like, to come second, like, that's in the World Superbike Championship, and people are like, mate, is that the suppose you're, that's it? Like, you're going to take it easy?
Like, fuming.
Yeah.
Put me in a bad mood all day yesterday.
Last question. What's the coolest free thing you've ever got? I'm not necessarily talking most value. I'm talking about the coolest free thing at an awards thing or from a sponsor or... I got a travel mug with my own name on it at a comedy festival.
That's cool. Is it cool?
Spelt it with 3 D's, but apart from that, it was pretty cool.
Asian fans always bring you gifts. Could be anything from food or...
Do you eat that food? Because I once got given food by someone at a show and I did not eat it.
Do you know what I did in Argentina this year? I was thinking, fuck, I hope water aren't here. Like, get tested after I've been contaminated. But it was a beer. I don't know what the beer was called. Their local beer in Argentina. And a guy goes, he had a...
Quilmes?
Quilmes.
Is that right?
Quilmes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where did I pull that at?
It's blue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Fair play. So, yeah. I had come back to Parc Fermé after decent race. I didn't even win. And the guy goes, oh, can I have your knee slayer? I was like, yeah, can I have a beer? And he goes, yeah. It's like, sweet. Beer for knee. And I, like, chugged the beer in Parc Fermé.
Right. But it could have been anything.
Free thing, I'd have to think about that. The real coolest.
See what even I've like. So are you with Kawasaki?
Yeah.
Kawasaki, right. Do you know what I'd love? What about when you're with them and they go, we'll send you some gear, some zip-ups, t-shirts, all that. I'd think that was class. Yeah. Do they go, get whatever you want here?
No.
Like, how many fleeces are you allowed?
Not many.
4?
In the season?
Yeah.
Like your team gear?
Yeah.
I get 4 t-shirts, 2 jerseys.
You should be getting so much more than that.
A coat, a gilet.
1?
And then they give you trousers, but I don't wear the trousers because I think they're made in Holland for Dutchies and I'm a wee short ass, so.
Right.
Yeah.
Clogs?
Yeah, they're massive. No clogs. Team... Coolest thing, coolest sponsor I get loads of cool stuff off is Oakley, because they do awesome sunglasses, motocross goggles, it's a perfect brand.
Yeah.
Like cool casuals and stuff like that.
I'd love to be sponsored by Oakley.
Yeah. When my manager did that deal, I was like, oh, so good.
Yeah.
Don't tell him about it. I've been paying for this stuff for years.
I remember in about 1999, every one on my street had fake Oakleys.
Yeah.
All the boys had fake Oakleys.
Just back from Tenerife,
yeah. Getting a sweet deal on the Oakley. The sports, like, they're almost like the wraparound ones.
Yeah.
With, like, the multicoloured lenses, they were unreal. They were unreal.
Don't remember them.
Yeah. Well, I think it was only me that had them, to be fair. I'm so impressed that I get Quilmes. It's because they sponsor Boca Juniors and... River Plate in Argentina, the football tops.
Yeah, yeah.
I think
Quilmes. Yeah, it's definitely Meres or
yeah,
Quilmers.
Mm. I'm trying to. So
I posted that on my Facebook page after, and loads of Argentinians were like loving the fact they're bigging up their beer.
Yeah,
I guess it's like somebody coming here and giving it a big one for Harp. You know, Harp or Guinness.
Yeah, we should definitely book out Windsor.
Yeah,
for a kickabout. Wait till my. Although, as we've established, I can still play on it when it's broken because I hit that corner. Remember
yeah,
I was telling
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah.
So I
you actually bent it in, didn't you? It scored.
I floated it in perfectly, and I'll not name a person on this podcast, but should have scored. And that would have been unreal. Imagine the goal. He broke his leg, but he played on, then he assisted a goal. But I just hobbled off after that. But as we say, back on the bike. Not literally, though, because remember, I also broke my wrist, so I would definitely not get back on a bike. Cheers for coming on. I would love to play. I want to join in your five a side.
Seven
a side, and I really want you to emphasize three corners a goal. Right. No, three corners a penalty.
Three corners a penalty. Right.
Start it this week and see how it goes. But you'll not look back.
They go for beers after, so I haven't yet. But maybe I'll do it under a beer. I'm too new to suggest stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I've no idea what I'm talking about. Right. And they know that, so they'll be like, "Who's this dickhead?
Yeah, yeah.
This little motorbike prick.
Who's this guy showing up in motorbike boots?
He's only been here
and a crate of tomatoes,
just changing the rules.
This guy just half time just eats six tomatoes. Johnny, cheers for coming on. Really appreciate it. And I was going to say I'll see you on the track, but I don't know why I would say that.
Yeah, you can come to a race.
I would love to.
Come to Donington.
Can I jump on?
Can you jump on? Aye, sure, why not?
When's Donington?
I want to say July.
Yeah, I'd love
Early
that.
July.
I would love that.
Yeah.
Can I have a lanyard?
You get a lanyard pass.
Can I
probably.
Keep the lanyard?
Yeah.
Can I have a gilet?
And
a pair of Oakleys?
You could ask the team. My team are very, very, very good at giving stuff out.
Brilliant.
Good merchandise deal because, everybody that comes gets nice wee goodies. So.
Do you want the tea with me mug?
Aye.
We'll give you one. All right. Cheers, Johnny. Appreciate it.
Cheers, buddy.
Sipper, God love you. If you've made it all the way through this episode, that means you love tea with me, you love this podcast, or it means like you've drifted off and you've just left this on play. Either way, what you need to do is head over to our Patreon. If you enjoy the podcast and you want more tea, that's where you go. We do a bonus episode called The Special Brew every Monday and a live stream podcast every Friday with some of your favorite comedians. You can chat, interact, ask questions. When we announce live podcasts, you get early access to tickets with a little bit of a discount on there. And there is so much more. You can go back and watch, I think, nearly 1,000 hours of content. Tea with Me Patreon, which is patreon.com/teawithmepodcast. The link is in the description. I'll see you there.